Good morning. This is Nash Gabriel with the Good Medicines, Cheaper Medicine. Of course, with me is, as usual, Shelley Wrench. And as we have promised and done before, we periodically bring special guests. Today, we have a special guest, James Thornton. James is the risk management consultant, an old friend, and a very knowledgeable guy in the field of health insurance, especially Medicare HMOs. James is from Lucas, Ohio.
Good morning. Yes.
That's where you live. And most of this discussion today will be between Shelley and James. She will ask him, and he will have to answer, right?
I will try my best.
And we thought that we should have this program because re-signing up for Medicare HMOs starts, what is it, October, November? Is that when people?
Actually, October 15th.
Yeah, October 15th. So generally, sometimes people sign up before that, right? Or they have to wait.
They have a period between October 15th and December 7th for the open enrollment. But there are some other special areas where they can sign up earlier or special circumstances. And we can talk a little bit about that as well today.
So the timing for the program is right.
Exactly,
for
yes.
The people to start thinking about their decisions. And I'm going to keep quiet here and give it over to Shelley to take it from there with James. And intermittently, I might interrupt to ask some questions.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Shelley.
Yeah, you know, how many years have you been in the healthcare arena space?
I go way back. I have about...
Unless you don't want to disclose that.
I have about 30 years in occupational medicine, specializing in pulmonary medicine as a NIOSH-listed instructor. That's the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. And I would go around the country teaching doctors and nurses how to interpret lung tests. I then evolved from that into the insurance and the risk management side of the business. And I've been doing that about 15 years now.
So you've seen it all?
Believe so. I've seen quite a bit, yes.
Just as much as I have over 22 years. There's been a lot of things happening. I just thought it was really, really important because, you know, good medicine is cheaper medicine. The reason that we're doing this program is to educate the public on everything about healthcare, on especially the medical economics, right?
Okay, yes.
And sometimes politics, which we're probably going to have to touch on that because it is involved in this topic as well. But tell me, when let's go in different circumstances. So say a person is just turning 65.
Okay.
What do you suggest?
First off, I suggest sitting down and speaking with the person face-to-face because what I'm finding is when they look at all the TV ads, all the radio ads, and their neighbors – everybody's saying, I want this, I want that. They really don't know exactly what they're looking for. And so if I can sit down and actually pull some questions out of them of what they want, what they're looking for, how much money they want to spend, how much obligation of money or other things will be involved with this, then we can find the right direction to go.
James, can I just interrupt for a second, ask you a question? You talked about the ads, and you're right. The TV ads will start bombarding us. I say us because I am 65, actually 66, starting maybe in August, September. Do you have a word to say about those ads? How believable are they? How detailed are they? How informative are they? Are they really honest-to-God ads?
I knew we were going to get into the politics.
It's not politics.
Yeah, the unfortunate part is the answer is yes, no, maybe, and could be. The ads that you normally see are anywhere from a 15 to a 30 second, maybe a 1 minute ad on television. And when you see those, they'll highlight things like zero monthly premiums or, being able to utilize something called silver sneakers, which seems to be a buzzword for a lot of people. When you're dealing with that, you automatically know that you're dealing with an HMO. Because health maintenance organizations, the HMO, tend to bring along certain areas along with their total package. And this is what they advertise on radio or on TV. And they're saying that if you have this program from this company, insurance company, whatever it may happen to be, then you can have the membership to the Y, you can have a drug program, you can have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week physician on call, and they start to entice you with all of these different areas. And some are good, but the one thing they tend to leave out, especially when they're talking on the zero premium, that is your month-to-month cost. What they don't talk about is the deductibles. And deductibles are the if you do get sick problem where you may have as much as $7,000 out of your own pocket at the end of the year.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago it was only like $3,200, then it started creeping up to like $4,500, and now it's I see everybody around the $7,800, $8,200 mark. I don't know what the law allows for it, but I think that everybody's pretty much at that upper.
Well, and they are, and it's kind of a if you were to lay things out on the table and say, if I want a monthly premium, say anywhere from $50 a month to $200 a month, the higher my monthly premium, the lower my deductible will be at the end of the year.
Right. You know, it's pretty expensive silver sneakers, isn't it?
It's very expensive.
I mean, if here it is, $8,000. If they would have just stuck with a traditional Medicare.
And what I'm finding out is that when I talk with people originally, and these are some of my clients, the people that have already signed up into a system, I ask them what they have, and everybody says the same thing. 95% will say, I have Medicare supplement. I said, okay.
I hear that all the time.
When you have Medicare supplement, there's a couple of little things I ask them to do. I ask them to pull their card out, not the red, white, and blue card that you have from Medicare, which is talking about Medicare Part A and Part B, which, by the way, will be changing this year. There's going to be a new card available because they're going to take your Social Security number off of that.
Right.
But the other card that you get from one of the insurance companies, and it'll say on the top or somewhere on the card, PPO or HMO, both of which are not Medicare supplement. And really, you have the definition of the difference between a PPO and an HMO. And I've got a few little things that I've seen personally, even within my own family, that create some problems.
Jim, you know, I'm a physician that's been practicing in the U.S. since 1984, and I'm dealing with these issues. And I am a Medicare recipient now. And a lot of the things you're saying now still sound latent to me because it is a complex system. I'm just wondering, the regular Joe or Mary sitting at home and see these commercials like we give you the moon and the star and you have to pay nothing. What advice do you give to these people, meaning to these patients who are not as informed?
Well, I guess the first thing I say is like your neighbor, but don't necessarily listen to your neighbor, because what may fit them may not fit you. Go back a little bit in history. HMOs have been around since 1942. The government got involved in about 1973, and HMOs are not just for Medicare and people at 65, but the first HMO group was Kaiser Permanente, the Kaiser Foundation, and these were started out in the California area. Bringing it up to current day, what we're seeing, and this is what, as you were saying, people that are getting ready to turn 65, they're looking at retirement, and now they're going from a health plan that was covered by their employer into a health plan that they have to fund on their own. A good example, as I said, it's a personal happening within our own family. My wife worked to a position where all the health care was covered under a PPO type plan. Went to the same doctor for 5 years, then she retired. Went to meet with the doctor. The doctor said, can I look at your card, or his assistant? And she said, sorry about that, but we won't serve you anymore.
Wow.
And she said, wait a minute. I've been here for 5 years. And she said, well, you went from an PPO plan to an HMO plan, and I, as a physician, am not hooked into an HMO program. Therefore, you are considered a new patient, and I'm not accepting new patients.
Did she know that?
No, she didn't.
Oh, she's your wife.
My own wife, yes. Because Physicians have the ability to join or not join different groups. Usually within an HMO, it's done by county or through a hospital organization. But PPOs many times are done individually. So the doctor that she went to, an internist, was within the PPO structure, not within the HMO. And it took me 3 months to get her out of the HMO program that she was in so that she could come back and see her own doctor again.
So your message is that you be careful when you choose an HMO plan, because your beloved, loving doctors, that doctor that you had had for many years might not be on the plan, and you might end up getting angry at the doctor. How come you're not on the plan? The doctor will say, because I don't want to, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's not because he doesn't want to. Many times, as everything in this world is based on finances, as you said, finances and politics. In his case, this physician hooked together with the local hospital group because of a lot of his bookkeeping and paperwork was now picked up by the hospital rather than by himself. It cut his own office costs down, but it also changed the dynamic on how he worked with his patients.
Got you. He became part of a group, and that group have already made a decision that they don't want to be provider on the HMO.
Exactly.
And generally, HMOs, they don't pay as well to physicians, right?
Yes. And normally what you will see is that the HMO has the highest discount level off of the list price, if you will, for services rendered. PPO is in between, and then the pay-per-fee provider, the doctor that you're seeing away from the insurance program, will have a different plan. But there are a few other things within the HMO plans and PPO plans that you really have to be aware of before you sign up.
So something that was born in California, married up with a hospital, made a huge disaster for your wife.
It did, and
are you saying bad things about California?
No, love California.
Well, actually,
I love the weather.
It's a nice country.
The first three plans that I did the research on all came from the California area, and it's more of saying that HMOs are regional. Even though we're mentioning the state of California, it's located within a specific region. If you look at most insurance companies, and remember, HMO is not, it's a hybrid, so it's a government agency / insurance company. And the other bad parts that go along with this is if you, let's say, a good example, you're living at the north end of the county. And at that point, you can see the hospital right across the street, but the county line is the street.
Not to interrupt you, James, I just want to make sure that the listeners get the point. The concept of Medicare HMO is, let's say you and I decide to have a Medicare HMO.
Okay.
An insurance company. Medicare come to us and say, hey, listen, we spend on average $500 a month on our enrollees, on our seniors. How about we give you, meaning Medicare, give you and I that $500 for 10,000 people, and we manage, is that accurate?
It's very similar to that, because what happens is when you become an HMO, you have to not only provide the primary care physician services, but there are a lot of other ancillary services that you have to pick up on. And that's under the contracts that the HMOs have with the government. And in turn, then some of the HMOs are able to get government funding to make sure that they stay afloat.
Now, isn't that when they get paid per diagnosis that they take care of? Because I know that even in our practice and on all practices, they come out about once a year and they have to look at all of her medical records, not just the claim. So instead of maybe a patient comes in, say, and I put one diagnosis on the claim, but when you look in the chart, there might be some other diagnoses on the chart that I didn't put on the claim. So they can turn those in, and that's how they get
payment,
right?
Yes, they're called DRGs, yes, diagnosis-related guidelines. And these are the things that they use to kind of set their funding levels. Yes. So you are correct.
Yes. So, again, for the public, is there a simple formula, very simple formula, like if you have Medicare or you are a Medicare age and you are perfectly healthy, you play golf 6 times a week, you exercise 4 times a day, right? And you're maybe have mild diabetes, mild hypertension. Basically, low risk for the near future to get serious problems. That's one category. So the question to you, Jim, would be, what would be ideal for that person compared to somebody who is on a wheelchair, he's overweight, he's diabetic, or she is hypertensive and heart disease? Is there a guide that you can create for those folks, or is it still individualized one-on-one?
Well, first off, I'd like to find a wife who would let me play golf 6 times a week.
I do it.
being past that, there's somewhat of a guideline. HMOs are required to accept all patients. PPOs, the same, because that's basically related to how much money you spend. You know, if within an HMO area, you have a certain cost for each patient or family or whatever may happen to be. When you get into the level of Medicare supplement, there is a window where 3 months before your 65th birthday and 3 months after, that you can sign up for a Medicare supplement at no
that is
medical
the
questions.
Supplement is that covers the 20% that Part
exactly,
B
yes.
does not, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in the state of Ohio also says that if you are under 65, even with a disability, you cannot collect Medicare supplement payments. Other states will have Medicare supplement for disability people below 65. Ohio does not.
So back to my question, is there a simple litmus test for the scenarios I gave you, Jim?
Probably the best thing is to give me a call. We sit down and we talk, because there is no easy answer. I have to find out, are you sedentary? Are you staying in one place, or are you a snowbird? Do you go south for the winter? If you do, is the doctor that you see down in Florida or Arizona or wherever, is he in the program as well? Because if not, you're going to have two different fee schedules, one for being in-network and one for being out-of-network.
So hold on a second. Like, let's say in Canton, in Stark and Summit County, we have two HMOs that are regional. We have all Primetime and we have Summa.
Yes.
If I sign up with one of them and decide to live 3 months a year in Florida, what will happen to me in Florida?
Chances are, unless they have an agreement with the local HMO, and most of the times they do not, you would be paying a premium price for any services rendered. Now, they don't even have to accept you unless it's an emergency. All groups, all hospitals have to accept emergency patients. Then they kind of work out the numbers after the fact.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Jim, I'm just wondering about this now. A lot of these HMOs, during the season, they visit people, they go to senior citizen places to explain to them. Do you, I know these things, that's why I ask you the question about if I go to Arizona for 2 or 3 months. If people don't ask, do the salesmen and women volunteer with all those little details?
Well, this is where it really helps to have an independent type agent. Number one, I have to be licensed in life, health, and annuity by the state. I also
Could you explain what independent means compared to what?
What we call a captive agent. If you're working for XYZ
captive
company.
Like handcuffs, like in jail?
Sometimes it feels that way. If you're working for an individual company, and that company only offers one PPO or one Medicare supplement or one HMO plan, you have no choice. So that salesperson, that agent, will push his plan.
Now, I know a couple of agents that they might sell like one or two. So if he goes in to talk with a couple and making this decision, if he's only got Humana and Summa in his backpack, he's not going to sell Primetime. He's not going to sell Anthem. Mm, so
correct.
Is he really doing the best for the people?
Not really, because what you find, and when you go through getting your license and your certifications, when you get into the Medicare Advantage, which is, by the way, called Medicare Part C, you lose A and B, and it becomes Medicare Part C on Medicare Advantage.
And that's another point that they tend to forget. How many times do people come up to me, present a card, and say, I have Medicare as a primary and Humana as a secondary? Now, Humana can be a secondary plan.
It can be, yes.
But it is not in this situation. When it becomes a Medicare Advantage plan, they're just completely...
Yeah. Shelley, from your experience, when you talk to patients all the time, roughly, what percentage of patients actually exactly know, when they switch, exactly know what they are up to? Or
zero. Absolutely 0%.
You mean these folks are being misled?
They're being misled. Once in a while, they do understand that it now is their Medicare plan, a Medicare HMO, right? But then they have no idea that there's fees on the background. It's zero out of pocket.
Yeah. Well, remember one thing, Jim. I think these HMOs, they are there to generate profit, right?
Like any business, they are there to generate profit.
But that's okay.
Well, nobody makes any money in selling Medicare. So they're going to make sure that they get something.
So what I'm saying is, when Medicare pays them what Medicare was supposed to spend on me, they have to curtail the spending on me to generate profit. Otherwise, how would you generate profit?
True. In fact, it's really kind of funny, because when you look at it and you say, how can a company have agents in the field, if you will, and not charge a premium for the product? And stop, think, if you're the patient and you have a zero and monthly premium, how can they afford to pay myself or anyone else?
Yeah.
And that's always picked up really on the deductible and the rest of the cost within the program.
So you're saying actually they even spend more money on marketing, and who pays for that?
It always comes back to the same person paying for it.
It basically in the form of restricted service or lower fees to the providers.
Yes. And you had mentioned one thing earlier, and I was kind of getting into this point a little bit. Let's say that you live on the north end of your county. The street in front of you is the county line. Big, beautiful hospital on the other side. HMOs are set up by county. You may be able to see that hospital, but you can't go to that hospital because that HMO doesn't work in your county. And it's very difficult when you're very close to a location of a hospital for primary care, but yet you have to go 4, 5, or 10 miles further away to go to a hospital to be within the network. You can still go, but you have to pay more.
Right. Let's say I made a mistake and I joined an HMO. After 2 months, I talked to you when you were having a drink, and you said, why on earth did you do this? What can I do then?
Well, the other thing, too, is not just making a mistake, but something changes in your life. And this is what we see in our practice all the time. You've got a patient now that's been on an HMO, and now they're diagnosed with cancer, right?
Yes.
So we've talked about this before multiple times. Go through it with our listeners as to what happens.
Okay. It really is triggered upon their age, too. If I can find a person that is within that window of 3 months before and 3 months after their 65th birthday, there's a little catch in the federal government sets up that says, I can't ask any medical questions. So if you have cancer, stage 1 through stage 4, I can't ask. I can sign you up within the program. And by doing so, I can alleviate a lot of your back-end headaches with the deductibles, because there's 6-7 different plans within a Medicare supplement group that deal with the deductibles.
But they can no longer, if they go back to traditional Medicare, when they try to get a secondary to stop the bleed from that 20%, after their three-month window, they can't get a supplemental policy.
Most companies will not allow a supplement policy to go into effect if you try to sign up after that window, because they're taking the risk. That's why, if you notice on my business card, I call it risk management. It's who's going to cover the risk. Is the insurance company going to pay, or are you going to pay?
I speak of business card. Again, we're talking to Jim Thomason from Lucas. Jim is a risk management consultant. He deals with life insurance, Medicare, disability income, cancer policies, or health coverage. Jim, if people want to contact you, is your cell phone the right thing to do?
The cell phone is the best way to do it.
Cell phone is 419-565-3457.
Yes.
They can text you or they can call you if they want advice.
I do have a website as well. It's Jim Tomlinson Insurance, all one word, and they can go on there and just go through the normal contact information, or they can email me if they want at jwt721@gmail.com.
You know, Jim, we've known you for a few years through Mike, our good friend Mike Durson, your brother-in-law.
Yes.
And when I turned 65, we turned to you to buy second insurance. We really trust you with your analysis, your candid, your honest advice. And that's why we decided, Cheryl and I decided, that we bring you to the show, because we do think there is a lot of misinformation or lack of information or whatever you call it. We see it every single day. And we just try our best to help people that when you make these decisions, because some of these decisions are not easily revocable or reversible. Am I right?
You are correct. And a lot of them, you may have to stay with it for the last 8, 10, 12, 10 months until we go through the re-entering of the enrollment period.
Was that the answer to my question? If I say I screwed up, what should I do now? What would I do? Wait for 10 months?
We need to really sit and talk. Sometimes it's waiting. Sometimes we can do some things and change. And it also depends on your own financial situation, because you can combine a Medicare supplement and, or excuse me, a Medicare and a Medicaid in what's called a dual special needs plan. And there's a lot of benefit to that, but we really have to sit down and go through that one by one.
Another point is when you go into one of these Medicare HMOs and you want to opt out the following season, can you then do Medicare Part B and buy secondary or supplementary insurance? Is that possible?
Well, you can opt out of the Medicare HMO type program and go back. You pick up A and B just as you had it before.
How about the secondary? That's important part.
Secondary, yes, you can, but it really depends on your health. If you have any health conditions at all, you probably would not be accepted into a Medicare supplement plan.
This has been very, very informative. I appreciate you coming and talking with all of our listeners. Again, this is Jim Tomlinson, the risk management consultant. Cell phone number 419-565-3457. Thank you so much for helping all of our patients. We truly adore you and consider our patients.
It is truly my pleasure. Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Thanks. Very informative, Jim. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners will appreciate it, especially for this season. Hopefully we'll be able to get you back here again maybe September, October, just before people start signing up, because I think it's important for people to know what you know well. And you know a lot, at least part of what you know.
I thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Jim.